Welcome to another ABC Radio National podcast. For more information, go to abc.net.au/rn.
Welcome again to ABC Radio National's Lingua Franca with me, Maria Zylstra. As a university student based in Germany a good couple of decades ago, Jeroen Matras, now Professor of Linguistics at the University of Manchester in the UK, stumbled across a local language variant that hadn't been noticed by his supervisor, an eminent dialectician. So Jeroen Matras researched it, or well, actually what there was still left of it among its remaining speakers, documenting what turned out to be the secret lexicon of the Jewish cattle traders who'd once roamed those parts, called the Kodesh.
Yes, there are actually several different pronunciations and different communities in different places. So some say Lakodesh, others say Lachodesh, others say Lakodesh. But they're all derived from Loshon Kodesh, which is the Ashkenazi or Western European pronunciation of the Hebrew term Loshon Kodesh, which actually means sacred tongue or sacred language. And that was the term that Jews used to designate the Hebrew language, which was the language of liturgy and the language of scriptures. And this, of course, is a bit of a playful name giving to a secret language, which was, of course, the opposite of a sacred and liturgical language. It was for secret communication and for sometimes creative and mischievous communication as well. So it's a bit of a euphemism, and that's the origin of the name.
Well, can you tell, please, how you came across this secret language and how you became aware of its existence?
I came across this language entirely by accident. I was a student in a southern German town of Tübingen, and I heard about a village not far away in the Black Forest area in southwestern Germany, a village that had a large Jewish population before World War II. And exceptionally in that village, the building that used to be the synagogue survived. In most of those communities, the synagogues were burned down by the Nazis.
And particularly in rural areas or in little villages?
Both in rural areas and in the towns. Jewish cemeteries had also been destroyed. And in this place, both the synagogue and the cemetery were preserved. Obviously, there were no Jewish inhabitants there anymore. But I went out there with a friend just to see the building of the synagogue and to see the cemetery. And we talked to local people and asked them about what was life like living alongside a large Jewish population in the village. And at some point we came to the issue of language. What did the Jews speak among themselves? Did they have their own language or did they talk? And people said, well, yes, some of them used a particular language of their own. And we said, well, did you ever learn any of that language? And they said, oh, yes, indeed, and started giving us entire words and entire sentences. Especially the men, the elderly men in the village knew quite a lot of what they later characterized as Lakodesh, the language of the Jewish cattle traders in particular. It turned out that this was not the everyday language of the Jewish population in the village, but it was the secret language or the in-group language of the cattle traders. Now, most of the Jews in the village were involved in the cattle trade. It was very much a Jewish profession in that region. Now, some of the non-Jewish population, the Christian farmers, got involved, first of all, through trade, selling cattle, obviously. But some of the young men actually had jobs, summer jobs, holiday jobs, whatever, working for the Jews, driving the cattle to the markets. Because at the time, you didn't just put the cattle on a lorry and transported it somewhere. You had to walk it to the market, and that was sometimes a whole week's walk. And they needed help, and they hired boys, young boys from the village to help them out. And so they were traveling together on foot for days and weeks sometimes. So those boys were in the company of the Jewish cattle traders and learned that secret language or in-group language from them. And after the war, they continued, a small circle of men continued to use those expressions among themselves. It became the secret language of a small circle of elderly men in the village. And they used to use it in the mainly in the pub to comment on outsiders and strangers and women and to tell other secrets and other mischievous thoughts that they wanted to communicate to one another without anybody understanding.
There is an example of that kind of mischievous joking on the Language Contact website. And I didn't actually understand this joke. I wonder whether you could explain it to me. It's to do with someone asking a woman using Le Kudesh, have you already peed this morning? And she gets a bucket of water and throws it over his head or something and says, yes, I have already peed.
No, she says, now you've also peed.
Oh, now you've also peed. Oh, yeah. Now I get it.
Yeah. Hast du schon mal gezeifert? Yeah, and then she goes out and she brings a bucket of water and dumps it over his head and says, also, it's hast du auch schon mal gezeifert? And, well, the point of the joke, actually anecdotes like this are told quite often by the, or were told 20 years ago by the older members of the community who had recollections of life together or alongside the Jewish community in the village. And the anecdotes are quite interesting in helping us reconstruct the original context of use of this in-group or secret language. And this particular anecdote shows us that it wasn't just a secret language, it was used to tease other people. It was used for entertainment. So here we get one man saying something to a woman, knowing that or expecting that she would not understand, to the amusement of all his buddies who are standing around. Now, of course, the irony is in the fact that, in fact, she did understand, and she turned that whole conspiracy around at him, and he became the person who suffered embarrassment, not her.
The joke was on him.
And the joke was on him, right. Exactly, because she understood the secret language which she wasn't supposed to understand.
So that was very much a remnant of a language that had a wider usage, spoken mainly in the south and west of Germany, but also in neighbouring regions like Alsace and in Switzerland as well as in the Netherlands. But how did it originate and how long ago did it come into usage? Any idea?
Well, first of all, when we say language, that needs to be hedged and clarified a little bit. We're not really talking about a fully fledged language. We're actually talking about a vocabulary.
Like a jargon, a lingo.
Well, a jargon has more of the connotation of a professional jargon, that is, words that are used, technical terms specific to that profession. This was not necessarily the case here. Of course, they had terminology for numbers, for money, for cattle, for animals, and so on. But that wasn't the main part of the vocabulary at all. It was just everyday vocabulary.
So it was like coded speech then?
Exactly. It was like coded speech. And the purpose of it was twofold, to create in-group solidarity. These people were, as I was saying before, traveling for days in, days out on the road. And another purpose was really for secret communication, to be able to communicate with one another in the presence of customers, business partners, authorities, strangers, and be able to say things without being understood. So the way this particular secret language or vocabulary emerged is by taking words of Hebrew origin from the Hebrew scriptures and inserting them into the everyday language that Jews spoke in those regions, which were basically German dialects. I mean, the Jews had a somewhat different dialect to the rest of the population. Being an ethnic minority, they spoke with a somewhat different accent and sometimes different vocabulary, but basically they spoke the dialect of the region. And Jews were familiar with Hebrew because they had some religious education, of course, and in their own schools they were taught to read Hebrew and to read the prayers, especially in Hebrew. So they had access to this vocabulary. Hebrew was not a spoken language, and very few people had active command, only people who went through extensive religious training, rabbis and so on, had actually active command of Hebrew and were able to write. Although Hebrew was used as a written language in many of the Jewish communities for minuting meetings, for keeping records of various things, Hebrew was the written language. But most of the members of the community had at least some passive knowledge and knowledge of vocabulary. And that vocabulary was inserted probably at first spontaneously. We don't know exactly when. There's some evidence that Hebrew vocabulary was used already when writing down the spoken German language already in the 12th or 13th centuries. Whether or not that at that period a secret language was also created by the cattle traders, we don't know. There's no records. The earliest records, I think, go back to the 17th century or so. And that is around the time when Jews immigrated and settled in the areas that we're talking about, because there was a Jewish population in Germany, of course, in the early Middle Ages, but they were expelled. And they were only allowed, Jews were only allowed to return around the 17th century and were given privileges, settlement privileges in particular villages in order to be taxed by the people whose land it was. And they were given permission to settle in certain villages and not in others. So there's a very particular settlement pattern, or was a particular settlement pattern. In the area, this is the Black Forest area that we're talking about, but all over Germany, actually, and Switzerland. And individual families settled in the 17th century and gradually got into the cattle trade. It wasn't until perhaps 100 years later that the cattle trade in that area became a very much a Jewish profession.
Secret vocabularies like that, are they widespread? Is there evidence of them in all cultures, or are they specifically to do with minority groups in circumstances where they need to establish an identity amongst themselves?
Secret vocabularies and languages are very widespread in intimate social groups, especially in situations where we're talking about not just professional groups, but family groups that are related, and sometimes ethnic minorities or immigrant minorities, where the social and cultural context is also the extended family context and is also the socioeconomic context. And so the relations between members of the group and outsiders are mainly relations of trade. There's no social immersion or cultural immersion. You meet members of the majority community only when you sell your services to them and when they are your customers. Apart from that, there is a strict separation of values. There's no intermarriage outside the community. There's not much socializing outside the community. And in these very, very tight-knit communities, language plays a very important role. Of course, some communities will have an everyday language of their own. The Romani communities, for instance, have a full-fledged language, which they use as a minority language. But in those situations where there isn't an everyday language, or where a language had been spoken by previous generations and has been lost, quite often we find that a secret vocabulary is created either by drawing on impressions of the old language that used to be spoken, as in the case of Romani communities that have lost the Romani language but have kept a vocabulary based on Romani. So the English gypsies, for instance, use that kind of an in-group vocabulary. Or drawing on written sources if they have a written language, as in the case of the Jewish cattle traders who had the Hebrew scriptures. Or sometimes if they don't have an ancestral language that was lost, by manipulating vocabulary, so distorting the forms of words or borrowing words from other sources.
Professor Yaron Matras, whose home institution is the University of Manchester in the UK, but he's currently based at La Trobe University in Melbourne in the Research Centre for Linguistic Typology. And his major focus these days is Romani, but more on that another time. If you like, you can hear some of the lexicon of Le Codex on the Language Contact website via the link on the Lingua Franca webpage for today's programme. I'm Maria Zylstra, back again same time next week here on ABC Radio National.
You've been listening to another ABC Radio National podcast. ABC Radio National, on air and online, with many of our programs available as podcasts or MP3 downloads. All the details at abc.net.au/rn/podcast.